This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com. And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. Joining me right now is Emilio Donnell, and our Fulham legends are back, Gordon Davis and Rob Wilson. In this episode, we're going to talk about the season so far for Fulham, which again, I think has been a huge success. I'll get the thoughts of Emilio, and then of course, Rob and Gordon, their thoughts as well. Before we go on any further, please, as I've always say on our episodes, subscribe on YouTube and also on Apple Podcasts on YouTube. It certainly helps other Fulham supporters find us, so please do subscribe. Lastly, just want to mention we are now part of the TalkSport Fan Network. You'll be hearing more about that in the upcoming weeks from TalkSport, and we'll see where that takes Cottage Talk. Really excited about this partnership we have with TalkSport. Okay, guys, let's get to it. Emilio, I'm going to get us started with something that you just mentioned. Let's talk a little World Cup to get us going. So we just had a match between the U.S. and Wales. Four Fulham players played in that match. So I'm not happy with the result. Gordon and I were talking about that beforehand. We could talk about the result, but I want to just start us off by talking about these four players. Emilio, who played the best out of the four?
I think it was a fair result at the end of the day. Wales, I was telling one of my friends who's actually in the World Cup, and my work colleagues, he went out on Saturday, and I predicted, I smelt a Welsh penalty. You know, when USA won a lot, I felt that Wales were going to get a penalty. Just felt like they were knocking on the door, and that was going to be their most obvious route probably to get a goal. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was a fair result. You know, I thought Robinson looked lively, you know, like he has done at Fulham all season. He's brought that Fulham confidence into the international game and looked very positive. And I thought Wilson's distribution was good. You know, I thought he looked a little bit sluggish when he's come back for Fulham. But I thought yesterday he looked lively, good at set pieces. He looked threatening and, you know, made a difference for Wales. Dan James didn't really get much of a look in, a bit like he's done against, you know, again at Fulham. He's been a bit hit and miss other than that goal last weekend. And Tim Ream, steady Eddie, you know, glad to see him back in the central defence for America. I have got a gripe with a British commentator. I don't know if Robert Gordon heard that Tim Ream fouled the attacker. I'm like, hold on a second. It didn't look like Tim for me. And look at the Ream.
They've both got them stupid bubbles on the back of their head. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. And did you hear that? The British commentator making a play was Tim Ream who fouled. And I think that's saying, okay, he's got to get a load of criticism. But thankfully, it wasn't Tim. But he looked steady as always and composed. Yeah. And looked in control in that defence. So good, from America point of view, it's good that you've got him in your central defence. I thought Robinson looked lively, made good runs, good link-up play, and is potentially a threat for you there.
I totally agree. And for me, and then I'm going to go to Rob and Gordon, the best for me, actually, Emilio, was the player that I did not want them to take to the World Cup back this summer was Tim Ream. I thought Tim Ream is funny. I actually had a few people comment to me that the U.S. were playing a little bit like Fulham. And I find that interesting, playing the ball out the way that they were passing it around with Anthony Robinson and, of course, Tim Ream, and the way they were moving it at times. I'm thinking I could see that comparison. But for me, Tim Ream has given something that the U.S. men's national team needs, and that's someone that is calm, cool, and collected and has some experience. And he offers all of that. And I thought he did an excellent job and was pretty cool under pressure. It was a little bit different in the second half, obviously, when they brought in Kiefer Moore. But for me, he was the standout out of the four. I thought Harry Wilson played well, and Dan James is the one that I think played the least, obviously, and didn't play the best out of the four. That's where I would go. Gordon, I want to go to you as a Welshman. Who played the best?
I think I'm going to agree with you, Russ, because I think Tim Ream has stepped up not only at club level, but he looked very assured at international level. And I was amazed how good he looked and how the cover that he put on, the tackles that he got in the head as he won. And I know he wasn't up against the a main centre forward, but Bale is still 6 foot plus. I thought Tim Ream did really, really well. Robinson always looks good going forward. I'm always concerned about him defensively because I think he sort of turns off and right. gets in the wrong positions at times. Out of the two Americans, Tim Ream stood out for me. I think Dan James was really played out of position okay. in a formation that didn't suit the game or the way that the Welsh team play. He is very, very quick, but you're not going to get a 50 or 60 yard ball from the back four that's going to put him in at international level unless you've got very poor defending. And as Emilio said, Wilson looks a bit sluggish and that is going to be a problem initially because, yeah, he's been out for 2 to 3 months and he hasn't had game time. So it's nice to see him in the team being given a bit of an outing. When you look at all four, I'm going to say for me, Tim Ream was the best out of the four, probably followed by Robinson. And then the bringing up the rear with the two Welsh lads who, as I say, one out of position and two trying to get match fitness.
Okay. And Gordon, before I go to Rob, a concern of mine, and this is a concern whenever you play in international football, obviously in World Cup situation, this is a unusual World Cup, the potential injury when I saw what happened to Harry Wilson, how concerned were you when you saw him potentially deal with a knock there?
It's always a worry and it's always a concern when you see somebody going down, especially in World Cups, because the next game is only 3 or 4 days away.
Right.
We have got a very, if I use a phrase, family orientated group of players there, and it's always been that way, purely because of the fact that there's not that many that you can put in the squad. There's a lot of more youngsters coming through these days than when I was playing. But when I played, you could say basically you knew probably what 14, 15 or 16 of a squad was going to be in those days. So it's always a concern. But as long as they're I suppose, walking wounded at the end of the day and they've got time to recover, then at least with Iran being second and England being third game, then I think we've got the players in the squad that can fit in just in case we do get one or two injuries, because obviously Ramsey doesn't look fit. Bale doesn't look fit. We're playing the best players who are unfit. So it gives them time to get that more of a match fitness for the decider, I think, which is going to be the England game.
Right. Very good. Okay, Rob, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the four Fulham players that played in the match between the U.S. men's national team and Wales.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to elaborate more than what all three of you said. I wouldn't disagree with any of it, really. I think Tim and Robbo have took their club form on the left-hand side of Fulham's defence into that a game the other night, last night. You're right that James has not really cut the mustard at Fulham as yet. He's been a bit part player. And again, last night, he looked out of sorts. He was probably asked to, as Gordon said, he was probably asked to play a position or a system that they thought that they could take to the Americans, but it didn't work. And he changed him at halftime. Harry, obviously, he's slowly coming back to form. He looked a little bit better last night than he did do the last couple of Fulham games when he's either started or came on. But, yeah, don't need to go too overboard other than I think Tim and Robbo were the best two players, I suppose, out of four of them.
Okay, good stuff, guys. Okay, before we move on from our World Cup discussion, let's talk about the other two foreign players that have yet to play. And, Gordon, I'll give you first crack at this. Let's talk a little bit about Paulinho, because when we talk about player of the season for Fulham, I think it's him. But we haven't gotten there yet. But I want to get your thoughts. He might not even start for Portugal. Then we got Mitro. So I want to get your thoughts on the whole Mitro situation with Serbia. And then, of course, your thoughts on Paulinho.
I suppose it's disappointing for Mitro that he's picked up this foot injury and according to reports, he's going to miss their first game, which is Brazil,
right,
which is probably the first game that he would have wanted to have played in. And then it really, I suppose, after the first game, do they need to take a chance with him to put him in the team? Even though he is the record goal scorer, they may be looking to the knockout stages rather than just getting through the group stage. So it's going to be interesting to see how he's played, whether he's in the starting 11 or whether he's going to be a sub and be brought on in case they need a goal, as they did when they played Portugal in the sort of the qualifiers. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does, because I suppose this is the next stage for him. I think he's already silenced some critics who've said that he can't score goals in the Premier League. He's got a better set of players with him now that are creating chances for him,
right,
in the Premier League. And he's getting on the end of stuff and scoring goals. So if he has my concerns probably with Mitro is if he has a very good World Cup, then do some bigger clubs come calling, not only in the January transfer window, but at the end of the season. And it's strange when about a fortnight ago, I read an article that he'd done in an Italian newspaper that he said that he really liked the two clubs that were playing each other that weekend, because he really liked the noise that their supporters generate. And that was Roma and Napoli. And I just thought, he started scoring goals in the Premier League. Has his agent now said, now you want to start making your noise made about foreign clubs because people are taking notice of you? So I honestly think that the World Cup is a very big stage for Mitro, and one which, from a Fulham point of view, could see him leave the club, which obviously I don't want, even though he is chasing my goal-scoring record. I want him to stay here and score 20 goals this season, and if he can, 20 goals next season as well.
You are a true gentleman there, Gordon Davis. A true gentleman for saying that. Over to you, Rob. I want to go over to you and get your thoughts on the Mitro situation. Feel free to share your thoughts on Paulinho as well. It's been hard because if we look at the last match for Fulham against Manchester United, I'm convinced we'll never know that if Mitro plays and some of the other injured players were able to play, I think Fulham win that match, not just get something from it. I think they win. But it's a difficult period for him. I wish him the best in the World Cup, and I expect him to play. Question will be, how much will he play? Rob, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously disappointing. He picked that sort of foot injury up. I think he was playing for it with a couple of games, you know. So I think he was just making sure he got through to the one but last game, league game, before the squad was announced. I think he'd set his heart on the World Cup. So I think that's why we left him out of that game. And I understand he was in Serbia having treatment, the build-up to the Man United game anyway. So he was never going to play for us. So it'd be interesting to see, as Gordon says, rumours are that he's out of the Brazil game. But, you know, you never know until, you know, whenever they're playing. I'm not sure what part of this week they are playing them, but yeah, they might just use that as a write-off game and keep him for game two and game three. We all know Mitro, and I think if he's 70-80% fit, he will play for Serbia, right, guaranteed. They will not wait and carry him till the knockout stage, because we've seen mistakes today in groups, and you know, you can't predict. So I think he'll play, whether he's 70-80%. I think he's a type of lad that'll seems to, you know, he'll put his hand up to play for Serbia anytime. So yeah, I just hope he cuts the mustard. He performs like he has been in the league. You know, I'm not that worried about, you know, all the big clubs chasing him. As far as I'm led to believe from good sources, he's very, very happy in London. His kids are in school. He's getting paid a nice big fat wage. You saw the Twitter Tony came out the other day saying that he had to convince him in the summer to keep him, which is 100% true. I know for a fact that's true. So, you know what I mean? His agent will be just trying to bum him up. And, you know, we've seen it happen two or three times in the last 4 years. Mitro's got 5-year contracts and they've been ripped up in year two and he's been given more money and signed a new 5-year deal. It's happened twice. So when other clubs have come sniffing, and I'm sure, you know, if that came along, and it depends how ambitious he is, you know, I mean, he's still a young lad, you know what I mean? We forget how young he is. Good, you know, he's still got years ahead of him to go and try Europe, and whether it's Italy or Spain or wherever. But yeah, I'm just hoping he stays fit, comes back. Fulham's my priority, not Serbia. So I'm just hoping when he comes back at Christmas, he's not done any further damage and that he comes back, you know, all guns blazing. In terms of Pellini, I mean, he has been our best, and we'll probably go on to talk about it later on in the show. But by far, the stats don't lie. He's been the best midfield player in the country in this, you know, by a long stretch, you know, in terms of his defensive tackles and breaking up a play, et cetera, et cetera. I think when I saw him in Portugal in pre-season, I liked it. I liked his stature, the size of him. You know, read up about what he'd done. Excuse me. And, I thought he'd be a steal, but he's turned out to be more than a steal, I think. He's just an absolute immense player to watch.
Okay, excellent. Over to you, Emilio. Thoughts on Mitro? It's funny because Rob read my mind. Nothing against Serbia, but I care about what he does for Fulham. So I want him to come back healthy. That's my number one concern with Alexander Mitrovic. And interesting stuff from our two Fulham legends talking about the future of Mitro. If he has a great World Cup, does that up the ante? Who knows? And when I heard Gordon say Napoli, my ears perked up because I was thinking Emilio's ears might have perked up a little bit there too as well. So I want to get your thoughts on Mitro and also Polina.
Yeah, look at Mitro. A player's career completely changes around in 2 years. You know, his confidence knocked to pieces. Parker just stuffed, you know, kicked the stuffing out of him completely. Look at where he is now. You know, flying high in the Premier League, you know, playing for his country in the World Cup, you know, potentially against, I don't think he will start tomorrow against Brazil if he's not 100% fit. I agree with Rob, if he's 80% fit, he will want it enough to want to just show himself what he's capable of doing on the world stage. But this is a very open group. You've got Cameroon and Opushov and Switzerland, we know are very difficult to beat. So I probably see Mitrovic being rested tomorrow and then give themselves the best chance to get something out of the next two games and qualify into the knockout stages. Brazil are no world beaters, let's be honest as well. So again, another, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're going to let goals in, but we know they've got enough talent there. They are the favourites for the tournament, but it would be a shame if he's not got a chance to play tomorrow, because I would have liked to see, you know, him stuff those Brazilians and give that defence a few problems, because, you know, I'm no big fan of the Brazilians. And who else to have in your attack? You know, someone like a bully like Mitrovic. So it's a shame if he doesn't play, but
right,
I think they'll have to protect his injury. And I think if he's not 100% fit today, I'd be surprised if he starts tomorrow. Switzerland and Cameroon are winnable games. Get 6 points from those two. Knockout stages and the world's his oyster. So I think I'd agree with you guys. I think his Fulham career and his Fulham state of health is more important. We would have beaten Man United if he was playing. Even if it was just him playing last weekend, we would have beaten them. So again, it just goes to show that, you know, we probably need a bit of depth in that squad in the January transfer just to boost up our central attacking options. I know we've talked about on this show with Rob and Gordon in the past. We knew we left ourselves a little bit short in attacking coverage if Mitrovic was picked up an injury. And ironically, we've picked up less points than we would like the last few games because Mitrovic not being 100% fit. So again, it shows how much we rely on him. So fingers crossed he gets better and he'll perform in the World Cup. Paulinho, the fact that he's playing for Fulham doesn't, you know, look, he's been the best midfielder in the country by a country mile, like Rob says. The fact that he's playing for a little club like Fulham and still getting picked for the World Cup, that's testament to the squad, the players that we've got in our team, the performances we're putting in, the shifts that players are putting in, the style of football that Silva is playing. All of that's grabbing a lot of international interest. And that's the reason why he's been picked for the Portuguese club. He hasn't been a regular in that squad for some time, but his performances is doing all the talking. So will he start? I don't know. I'm not too sure yet. I think I have to see. I'm not, I think there's a potential he may play a couple games, but I don't think he'll be an automatic starter. But great experience for him, great focus. Again, should we be worried as Fulham fans if he does start to play in the World Cup, performs at the same level as he does at Fulham? What does that mean from other clubs coming knocking at the door? So that's just a little threat for our little beloved club, to be honest. But we'll see. At the end of the day, Tim Ream, again, not played for the USA since September. Why was he picked? You said it, Russ. Experience and his performances at Fulham. And again, that's testament to the squad of players that we've got and the dizzy heights of seventh place that we have in the Premier League.
Okay. Before I move on, Emilio, Napoli, hands off. Okay, I'm just going to say that right now. Hands off, okay?
They're doing, I'm not going to tempt fate, but Napoli are doing very well in the domestic league. I know they had a bit of they have been playing very well and knocking teams off the park. But yeah, I'd rather he stays at Fulham, but Napoli is obviously another big priority for me as well. So,
okay, guys, before we really break this down, I have some interesting questions from Chris Goodwin. So I'm going to share them both with you. First, I'm going to go to Gordon because, Gordon, you and I were talking about this. This is World Cup related. Should Kiefer Moore have started for Wales? You said yes.
Yeah, I think the performances that he has put in, he gives them a different option, and he is quite a mobile centre forward, and he will run the channels, he will run into the corner and chase the longer 30-40 yard ball down into that area, but he holds the ball up, and that's one thing that we didn't have in that first half against the United States. For someone to hold up, and then you build up play. You can't play at international level unless you've got either a very, very good midfield that you're going to play through, and they're quick, and then they turn and they knock quick players in. But otherwise, you've got to have somebody up there that's going to hold on to the ball to let everybody else join in. Especially the way that the game is played now, you're starting from your own 6 yard box,
right?
So when the ball does get forward, if you've got your players supporting your centre halves, they're literally 10 yards, 15 yards outside your own box. So you've got 30, 40 yards to make up to get in support of players. And Kiefer Moore, I think, probably showed his worth as soon as he came on, and he gives them another option from set pieces. It gives them another 6 foot plus person for set pieces, whether it's free kicks or corners, and he's very, very good in the air. So if you've got him there, Bale, the two centre-halves coming up, you've got 4 6-footers that can score goals for you. So I was surprised when he didn't play, and when I listened to Rob Page's sort of ideas on the game, that he wanted to bring the United States onto them and catch them on the break because he thought that pace might worry them at the back. It never developed, but fair play to him. He changed it at halftime, and he didn't wait until sort of 60 or 70 minutes. So at least he's learning as an international manager as well when things aren't going well. But generally, they've been going pretty well for the Welsh team over the last sort of few years. But all credit to him that he did change it, and he brought Moore on and changed the game.
I was about to say, Gordon, he changed the match. Kiefer Moore coming on completely, utterly changed the match. So credit to him. Credit to Paige for making the change. I think he should have started him. But, you know, who am I? I'm not a manager, but that's what I would have done. But, yes, to answer the question, I think he should have started, but he didn't. We'll see what Paige does moving forward. Now, here's an interesting one. Rob, I'm going to give you a crack at this one. You ready for this? Cool. With Cristiano Ronaldo being a free agent, do you fancy him as a signing for Fulham to back up Mitro? Do you think Fulham would even remotely look into this, Rob?
No. Definitely no. I wouldn't have him within 10 mile of the ground. I wouldn't even let Chelsea have him.
Yeah.
He can go to Arsenal. He can go to Arsenal and go and see Piers every week then.
Yeah.
Oh, what a train wreck of an interview.
It's only ever going to be one way. He did that interview just on the pre-World Cup to come to this decision, and fair play. You know, I'd be disappointed if they didn't fine him the 2 weeks' wages, which is the maximum they could probably do under the obligation of the PFA. But I'm sure he won't miss 2 weeks' wages when he gets his final check next month from Man United to wherever he ends up now. You know, he's got the World Cup now as a glory stage for him to go and get his next club, which I'm sure they'll be queuing up for.
I think I've got to agree with you there, Rob, because if he signs for Fulham and scores 50 goals a season, he's only got to have a 4-year contract and he's beaten them by record.
Okay, well, listen, I don't expect it to happen. I watched the interview and I kept shaking my head thinking, why is he doing this?
There is a rumor, Russ, he might end up in the MSL, so he could be over in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I could see that, but again, as you guys said this, and Emilio, I'm glad that you chimed in on this. No player's bigger than the team. Why would you do this? You might have really hurt your legacy at Manchester United. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, you know, there's two sides to the story.
Right.
He did have, obviously, some child issues in the summer and coming back to training late and this and that. And the new manager didn't sort of take him under his wing and give him a little bit more, you know, kudos because of who he was. But, you know, he had to go in there and set the ground rules, you know what I mean? Because he's got 25 and lots more at Man United, probably 40 other players in that squad to keep happy. He knew he was only ever going to have meet Ronaldo for a year, 18 months max. So I think he were right to treat him as one of the normal players, whatever's gone on underneath, and for him to come out. I only watched the first part of the interview. I didn't watch the second part. I was bored after the first part, and I knew it was a typical sort of come and get me plea, you know, after the World Cup, because we knew he probably would have gone before it. But yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people out there that'll want him, even just for sales of the shirts, you know.
Yeah. Listen, first part was enough for me too, Rob. I'm there with you. Let's move on. Enough talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. I want to talk about Fulham. So, Gordon, I'm going to give you first shot at this. Let's talk about just your opening thoughts on the season so far. I'll just share mine just real quick that I'm pleasantly surprised. If you told me they'd be where they are right now, I would have bitten your hand off. I'm very happy. How about you?
I think you've got to be happy. I think at the beginning of the season or the end of last season, we were all saying that, yes, we needed 6 or 7 players to come in. Were we going to get the quality players? Was it going to be again? We signed 5 or 6 loanees on the last day of the transfer window, and even though a few of them were late coming in, the club have signed quality this time. And you've mentioned sort of Palhinha already. He's been immense in the middle of the park. I think he's given Harrison Reed a new lease of life, because when you think about the Leeds game, and Harrison Reed is in the 6-yard box or near the 6-yard box beating a player and pulling it back, he wasn't anywhere near the 18-yard box last year. So he's sort of brought the best out in Harrison Reed at the moment. And as Rob mentioned earlier, the stature on the guy, he scored a fantastic goal with his head. He scored a brilliant side footer from about 25 yards. So he's got the ability to get goals for us, which we've struggled from midfield in years gone by. So you're looking at a person there who's certainly enhanced the squad and the players around him. And where we are at the moment, I don't think any of us looking at the fixture list would have thought we can get a point against Liverpool. We could have got a point against Man City away. We should have got a point against Man United at home. So you could even be looking at 2, 3, 4, 5 extra points from where we are now. And as Emilio said, the dizzy heights of 7th, we're halfway through, or potentially halfway through the season. You might even get on another podcast later on, are we in a position to qualify for Europe? So it's all there for the taking at the moment. And yeah, I'm very pleased with the way things have been going this season. And yes, you look at the way that we've lost some games in the final minutes, but we've not really been taken apart all season, apart from the the Newcastle game, and we played sort of, what was it, 84 minutes with 10 men. So it was only going to be one-way traffic that game. So, yeah, very, very pleased with the way things have gone so far. And now really looking forward to the second half of the season and getting a few more wins under our belts.
Okay. It's funny because at the end of the show, I'm going to ask you guys about what Fulham's approach should be for the upcoming January transfer window. And should they consider maybe a different approach going for it to potentially get themselves into Europe? That's very interesting. I was thinking that, Gordon. I'm glad that you mentioned that because I don't think it's as far-fetched as maybe some would think to go for Europe. So I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Especially when you do look at the league tables and you're looking at a situation where some of the teams that are finishing the top six, top eight, are in the bottom eight. So there's a lot of strange results going on this season. And as long as we can still keep picking up points against, I've always said we are in that 10-team league, but I tell you what, we're in a 14 or maybe a 16-team league at the present, the way things are going.
That's great. Rob, over to you. I want to get your opening thoughts so far on Fulham season, and I'm going to add a little wrinkle to it. So I'm glad that Gordon mentioned some of the results that maybe could have gone Fulham's way. So give me your thoughts on the season so far. But I also want to ask you this question. I actually put this on Twitter. Should Fulham actually be higher up the table at the World Cup break based on what Gordon was talking about? There was an opportunity there, a few opportunities that Fulham could actually be higher up the table.
Most definitely, yeah. I mean, just to echo what Gordon says, it's been a nice surprise how we've approached the season this year and the results, other than the Newcastle game, we haven't got. You know, we haven't got turned over. We should have got something at Arsenal. We should have got at least a point at Arsenal. Tottenham, we could have easily got a point as well. I know it sort of, we got a late goal to make it 3-2, but there were two games. Manchester United, we should have won that game, never mind losing it. I mean, my only concern in when I see we are conceding late goals is, you know, is he going to address that to see games out and close games out instead of, you know, substitutions that he might have made in that last 10, 15 minutes, or I don't know what sort of concept he gives them that when it's 1-0, is he going for the winner? You know, you think back to the goals that we have conceded. Arsenal was a bit of a keeper's mistake, I think. I know it could have been a VAR and a handball, but as much as the keeper had saved us a couple of times, I still blame him for that Arsenal goal. I think he should come and punch that, take everyone out. Tottenham was a little bit different. Man United, which definitely should have got a point. So, you know, in real terms, yeah, we could be sitting another 3 or 4 points further up the table. But, hey, if we'd have had this conversation, which we did, we would be having this before the World Cup break would have been where we are today. I would have snapped your hands off. And you look at the players that, you know, we've had some injuries, Solomon, Gibano, Wilson, all wide players that have going to have long-term injuries. And obviously one's on the way back now. Will I Am, as I call him, he's surprised me. He's looked good in the last few games, which, you know, he still needs to convince me to do it week in, week out, you know, but he has shut me up in the last few games. He's definitely, you know, if he plays to that sort of consistency regular, he's going to be a threat because he's going to make assists. He's going to score goals. He's going to make goals from Mitro. Defensively, again, we were all crying out for to get Ream and Robinson, and they've probably been our most assured defenders on that left-hand side for the whole season. You know, there's only one person that's got dropped, it's Tosin, and everyone would have thought that would have been Tim, game in, game out, and he's been an 8 out of 10, and Robbo the same. Every game, he's shuffled out some of the world's best wingers, and you know what I mean, and still giving us an attribute and something going forward. Yes, it's not always 100%, and the right-hand side, again, I'd like to see Tetti in there more regular and not injury prone, because that's always a suspect side when it isn't. And the middle two, just, you know, as we've said, I mean, Harrison looks he looks like a Ray Lou, Rob Wilson type player. He's got a license to go forward. He's buzzing all around the pitch because he's got the assurance that Pellini just sits in there and he just shores up them gaps from that, you know, from back to front. And it's nice, you know, it's obviously Tom's come on and had a cameo probably 15 minutes every game, bar one, I think. you know, and ball retention, keeping the ball when we're trying to see games out. That's what I just want to make sure Silva, I'd like to know his ethos on trying to see games out rather than go and try and win them, and especially at home, you know, just take the point and not try and go gunno and try and win it in the last sort of 2 or 3 minutes, because we have been a little bit suspect of conceding goals, whether it be individual mistakes or bad defending at certain parts against obviously some of the best players in the world. So yeah, I would have took this position absolutely before the beginning of the season.
Okay, before I go to Emilio, I actually wanted to touch on this because you brought up something that I've been thinking about, especially during this break, Rob. It's the mindset of Marco Silva to see matches out, to get the point. I don't think that's in his mindset. I think he goes for the victory. Now, I think that has also caused some issues with potentially leaving points there for the taking. Like you said, the Manchester United match, I don't think there was any way he was going to not go for it, because that's been his MO. Rob, I agree with you. Where do you cross the line to getting the point or going for the victory? It looks like to me, based on what we've watched, that Marco Silva always goes for the victory, Rob. And if it's going into the end of a match as a draw, he goes for the victory instead of going for the point. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, as a manager, you've got to probably make that decision to relay to the players. It depends where you are in the league, how the game's gone. Have you come back from a game to snatch a draw at 1-1 and been battered by someone, you'd shut up shop. If you're on top, like we probably were for most of the game against United, he probably was right to keep the message going out from the touchline to the players. You know, we can get the winner, you know. Right. It's unfortunate the way the build-up of that goal ended up coming as the last kick of the match. As I say, Arsenal away was probably slightly different. It was a mistake. We were still in. You're always still in with a shout when it's 1-1, you know, and there's minutes to go. It can go either way. But I don't know from first hand whether how he really understands what message he sends to the players in that sort of situation. Do we go for it or do we just shut up shop and be happy with a point? I think that it all boils down to whether you're home or away, I presume, and how the game's panned out, whether you're happy with a point or whether you feel, you know, you can go and get them by the juggler and get the extra 2 points. But I'm sure he's got a mindset of how he does it. And obviously, he must have done it right most of the season because of where we are today, even though we're slightly disappointed talking about a few games where we've lost points or could have gained points.
How crazy is this, Emilio? We're talking about points that we could have gotten.
Yeah.
Think about that's where we are on this. Give me your opening thoughts on the season so far.
Yeah, and I think, we've also agree with the lads. You know, we would have taken 19 points in seventh place before the season with our eyes shut, you know. But it's the disappointment is that there's no game other than Newcastle. There's no game that we've nicked a point or undeservedly got points. All the points that we have earned, we've earned through merit. So that's when it makes it slightly even more frustrating when there's probably about 3 or 4 games I thought we should have had more points. I think the Wolves game, I think Mitrovic, you know, you don't get many penalties in the Premier League. You've got to take those chances. Arguably, that's 2 points dropped. Arsenal, I didn't think we were good enough for 90 minutes, but like Rob said, anything could happen when it's 1-1. But you know, at the end of the day, that's a free hit against a big team. They're obviously top of the table. The fact we held them almost for 90 minutes is testament to the way we're playing. But I saw the Wolves game has dropped points. Everton game, I thought at home, Pickford was in inspired form, but again, a fully fit Mitrovic probably would have taken chances and we would have got 3 points there. And the last 2 games are against the Manchester team. I think, you know, Marco Silva's a bit of naivety there. Again, he'll learn from that. Yes, you said that's the way he played, but Man United, I don't remember for many years a stadium to go completely dead silent when we conceded the death. There'll be moments when, okay, fair enough, you weren't the better team, you got sucker punch. To dominate, and Paulinho playing the game he played on that Sunday, goodness me, what a beast. And to come out on the losing side on a game that you fully deserve to win, or at least get a point. I think Silva made a mistake there. You know, I called him out there. You know, they close that game out, grab the point and move on. And Man City again, I thought, you know, call it what you want, dodgy penalty, whatever. But, you know, I actually thought that was 3 points for the taking when they went down to 10 men. Why didn't we play Marco Silva tactics rather than trying to defend and hold on to a 1-1 draw? and maybe catch them on a break. And again, that didn't pay off because we conceded a late penalty. So, yeah, you could argue we should have, what, another 5-6 points on what the guys have said. So 19 points, you'll take that. But the fact we've had so many injuries, let's not forget, how many injuries have we had this season? Tete's been injured and suspended. You know, central defence, we've had too many injuries to deal with. Now we've got Mitrovic injury as well. He's been off colour the last few games, not played. So the fact that we're still seventh with many injuries and a fairly slim squad, come on, we can't complain. You know, we'd be very happy with that. So once we get Salomon back, Tete back playing in, week out, Mitrovic hopefully will have a good World Cup and he'll be fit for the new year, then we've got a lot to look forward to.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, coming up next, we're going to break down the team, our thoughts on how they've all played in the season so far.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Okay, guys, let's get to it. Emilio, I'll give you first crack at this. We're going to go through the different positions, and then when we get towards the midfield and, of course, up front, I will let our Fulham legends break that down. But let's start with a goalkeeper. Give me your thoughts on the job of Bernd Leno so far.
Very strong, positive, and a good signing. Has been, again, a bargain signing. If we bought him for as cheap as we claim to have bought him, he's a significant upgrade to Rodak. I know we all love Rodak. He's done a good job for us over the years in the Championship, but no one can doubt the fact that Leno is an upgrade. And I think we've got a good leader at the back of the defence who's commanding his box well. He's made a couple errors, but all keepers do. But overall, I feel much more reassured in being in goal. And, you know, he's saved us in a few games as well. He saved us a few points, which all count at the end of the season, especially when we're sort of, you know, every point counts. So great signing, great negotiation from Tony Khan. And yeah, I think he's got a good future ahead of him at Fulham.
Okay, excellent. All right. Rob, I'm going to go to you. Let's talk about the fullbacks, because you've already mentioned a little bit about Jedi and, of course, Kenny Tete. So I want to get your thoughts on especially the Tete situation. I think that's the more worrisome situation that Fulham have right back, because I don't know if you can count on him when he can play. I think he can play at a Premier League level. What happens when he can't play? Nothing against Bobby Decker Dover Reed, but I think it actually hurts you in another way, because it takes away an option for you up front, because I think Bobby Decker Dover Reed can do it all, but I think he's more valuable to you up front. So let's talk a little bit about your thoughts on the fullbacks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the left-hand side, Robbo's been superb, as we all doubted him, as we did at the beginning of the season on the left side.
Me too.
Tim, and he's done exceptionally well. Yes, he still resorts to the odd bad pass or crazy chicken. He loses his head, flies around like a lunatic and loses. But I think this year he's thought more about his defensive starting position. I watch him quite properly now sometimes, and I thought, well, he wouldn't have done that last season. He seems to have learned the mistakes. I think whether we've took him aside in coaching, in training, and say, well, sit in there and don't bomb forward until we've got good possession, or you start to see it build up across the midfield too and getting out to that left side. So, yeah, the right-hand side is obviously been a worry, because Tete's, you know, I don't think you're ever going to get 38 games a season out of him because of the way he plays. He just looks that he's an athlete, but he looks a sluggish athlete. He looks tired. When he makes a run, it takes him a while to get back, and he looks like he's always on his haunches and struggling to get breathe it back in to get ready for the next one. You know, I like him when he's on the ball. I think he's pretty safe. I'd like him to take a little bit more risk in the final third. I think he's probably one of the better crossers of the ball we've got, you know, much better than Robbo is on the left-hand side, although he's starting to improve and pick people out or hit areas rather than hit that first man. Bobby, yeah, I don't like Bobby playing at right back. I know he's inadaptable. I thought he was Leeds away. He was absolutely shocking. And I said he should have come off at halftime. Obviously, he stayed on and ended up scoring one of the goals. But he was causing more problems for us than he was doing, doing well for the team. And because he was basically he's been a number nine, he's been a 10, he's been a 7, he's been 11. Now he's a 2. Like he's too adaptable. And then you get tarnished with that brush as a player sometimes. You know, I know he's lucky and he's staying in the side at the moment because Silva's putting him here, there and everywhere. But I wouldn't want that if I was a player myself, because you'll be, someone will always come along who's better you in that position, and you'll get pushed sideways. So yeah, that's an area that I think we need to probably look to strengthen. We thought we'd sign the other guy. He came on at Tottenham. I felt sorry for him when he came on at left back and gave that first goal away. And he never recovered since then in Babby. So, I mean, I really don't know. We need a right back, definitely. I think left back, I think we're all right, but I think we need a proper recognised back. And I think, these days, I think you can pick them up in the January window, hopefully someone who's going to fit in and play that role, who definitely needs some depth in that area.
Okay, I totally agree. It's funny because I've wanted them to play in Babu, but there's a reason why Silva's not playing. He doesn't trust him, so I think you need to get a right back in the January transfer window. Okay, Gordon, back over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the center backs as a striker. I'm curious your view of the three that have been playing, and Duffy hasn't been playing for whatever reason. He hasn't. So I think the focus should be more on the three that have, and the decision by Marco to really now start featuring Diop and Tim Ream. And if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that Tim Ream would be your starting center back, I wouldn't have believed it, but he has proven me wrong. He's played fantastically. So I want to get your thoughts on these three center backs, and what are your thoughts of who are going to be the two moving forward?
Well, I think you're right in what you say. I think all of us had reservations about getting back into the Premier League and still playing Tim Ream. I'm along with you. I've got to hold my hands up and say, yes, I was one that was thinking that we needed to replace him. And shall I say, he shut me up as well by the way that he's played. So well done, Tim Ream. Rob mentioned about the person that we all thought was going to be in the team, Tosin, really hasn't in a way had a bit of a look in. And Issa Diop, who, when he came in for the first, I think his first game was in that FA Cup tie when him and Duffy played, and they just looked as though they hadn't even played a game together, never mind 200 games or 300 games previous to that game. So both of them had a dodgy start, but Silva's put his faith in Diop. And even though I still think that when the ball gets played to him, he doesn't look great on the ball, and where other players, if we just go back to one of our centre-halves that Rob and myself played with, Tony Gale, if you knock the ball into him, he'd probably control it first time and his second touch would be a pass, if needed. With Diop, every time it goes across to him, you're wondering how many touches is he going to have to get it under control and then pass it. And at Premier League level, you can get closed down so quickly that just that one mistake when a ball's crossed to you could lead to a goal. And Tosin was in a bit of that, in my opinion, a bit of that league where you always thought he was going to perhaps do something that was going to lead to a goal. You go back a few years ago when he was trying to do little Cruyff turns on the edge of the box and got caught out. And when he came into hospitality, maybe a month, 6 weeks later, I had a chat with him about it in front of all the Fulham supporters. And I just said, have you learned your lesson with regards to the little Cruyff turn pullbacks on the edge of the box? And he said, yes. And then literally about three games later, he tried again. He got away with it. And I thought, now, have you learnt your lesson at this level? So I honestly think he's going to stick with those two, Ream and Diop, at present. But what the situation is with Shane Duffy, because I think even Rob would class him as an old English centre-half. There's no airs and graces about him. He wins the ball in the air. He is a big lump. He's about 6'4", 6'5", as well as the other centre-halves are these days. But there's obviously something there that he's not being given a run in the team unless perhaps one or two of those lads picks up an injury. So although we have got cover, I wouldn't say it's cover that you know that they're going to come in and fit in straight away, because obviously they've not, if you take Tosin and Duffy, they've hardly played this season. So if one comes in, they're going to be coming in cold, and you're hoping that the training sessions, are going to be good enough that they're going to pick up the pace of the game straight away without being caught out early in a game. So I think that we're looking decent at the back, but I'm always wary that we're likely to give a goal away. And there's not many games where we go into these days where I'm thinking with the back four that we've got, we're going to sort of keep a nil scoreline. So we've got to score one, or we've got to score two to get a point or to win a game. And that's sometimes a tough ask when you haven't got your main striker out there. And we're still trying to find a way to fit Vinicius in the team and get the best out of him, because he's a completely different player to Mitrovic. So you've got to play a different style of football if he's up top.
Okay, and we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. But over to you, Emilio, and then I'm going to lean on our legends to talk about the midfield and up front. So just give me your overall thoughts on the defense, and very interesting words from both Gordon and Rob on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've said everything I would have wanted to cover. I think we're always liable to concede goals. I think that Gordon made the point just a few moments ago. So that's always been my worry. The games that we have won, it's a testament that we've been like Brentford. We've had to concede two, but scored three. I'd like to see more clean sheets. I'm not sure we're going to see that with, again, that's a Marco Silva philosophy. You know, it's all about, you know, attack first and defence second. So I think we need some defensive reinforcements there. The speculation about Tosin, I think his contract's due for renewal next year. Is that right? I think his contract's up for renewal. So again,
I think they've got an extension on it. They've got 12 months on it.
12 months. So, you know, I'm glad to see Diop in there, to be honest. I think, you know, we paid a $50 million price tag for him. He should be starting. I think he's giving us good aerial threat from set pieces. I agree with Gordon. He's liable to make a mistake, but then so can Tim Ream and so can Tosin. I just want to, when Diop's come in, he feels a little bit more assured. I feel more better on the ball coming forward. I just feel he feels like a more complete defender with a bit more experience. So I'm happy that he's in our starting 11. Tim Ream, you can't fault him. Look, 35-year-old professional. We thought he was going to be just a dressing room captain, so to speak. You know, keep the dressing room motivated. Look, he's been playing every game. So testament to the guy for his commitments. He had a shocking season the last two Premier League options. This season, he's been outstanding. Tete, you know, we know what he's like. You know, he's conservative, good defensively, but, you know, he's constantly picking up knocks. And he's picked up 5 yellow cards as well. So, again, he was suspended for one game. And Robinson, yeah, had a good start to the season. But, you know, again, he's also been making less mistakes, picking up less yellow cards as well. These are all things that are important. We have picked up a lot of yellow cards in our squad this season. I think Haaland getting suspended against Newcastle, and then we know what happened then with Shalabar coming in. So, Let's keep our discipline, because it's going to be important for the rest of the season. It's important we don't pick up as many yellow cards as we have done. Keep it tight where we can, but I think we need to tighten defence, because at the moment, even with Pellegrini in the team, we're still conceding 2 goals again. I've said this before, so great, he's been a rock for us, best midfielder in the country, but there's only so much he can protect that back four. And the fact that we're conceding on average 2 goals a game, that's just an area of concern, really. But overall, you know, that's probably our weak link in our defence.
Okay, excellent. Let's talk about one of the strengths, and I'm going to go over to you, Rob. And we've already talked a little bit about Paulinho, Reed, and we haven't really talked about Pereira. I think he's been a pleasant surprise. So as a midfielder, I want to get your thoughts on how this has all worked together. You saw this in Portugal. You saw the beginning makings of Paulinho, but did you see it working the way it's turned out? I think now I have seen why Marco Silva wanted to turn Harrison Reed into the player he's become. it's now worked out really well for him. I think he's grown as a player in this role. I thought he would be in the role that Polina was in, but he's actually thrived in this role, and I think he's become a better player playing with Polina. But then, of course, you, like I said, you have Pereira as well. So let's talk about the midfield. I think this is a huge strength for Fulham right now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely them three have been, you know, the backbone of the team going forward, as well as defensively. I think Pereira has been, again, the jury was out with me whether he could come from a team like United and cut it every week. He looked like he had a sort of attitude about him when he plays. When he's on song, he looks really good. If it's not going his way, which hasn't happened many times this season, he seems a bit of a sulker. And I wanted to see the consistency, which we have seen this season more times than not than what I originally probably saw at Man United. Pellegrini, I mean, obviously he's been, you know, we could talk about him for 90 minutes all day long. And I'm sure lots of other managers and players are doing up and down the country regularly. He's come in, he's just took this division by a storm. You know, he's like what I would say, like a Patrick Vieira back in the day when he bounced onto the scene at Arsenal as a big, strong, 6'2" gang, you know, gets his foot in, gets tackles, wraps his foot around people, but can actually play. You know, he can pass a ball, he sees a pass, he's strong in the air. I think he can add goals to his game, even though we're saying he's playing as the defensive midfield player. I think he gets up and down the pitch well. He's going to be good at set pieces. And it's also given Tom the Harrison the license to go and be a busy little bee like he's been. You know, he's never played as far forward in his career. He's admitted that. And he's actually getting in the box, as Gordon alluded to, more times this season than he probably would have done in four seasons in his career. So, yeah, them three have been a revelation to me. And it's obviously been very difficult for other midfield players. Not that we've got too many that would be pushing for starting lineup. Tom would be one, obviously. Chalobah, we saw, you know, when they do get their chances, Chalobah and Onoma and all that, they're just bit part players. You know, they're never going to start 90 minutes, five, six, eight games on the trot for Fulham. They're just not good enough. Simple as, you know, I still think we could strengthen in that position. I still think, you know, if one of them gets injured or Tom gets injured or gets, you know, we've only really got one spare midfield player in my eyes that can come on to replace any one of them three. The wide players is slightly different in terms of, you know, the wide midfield players, or call them what you want.
Right.
But yeah, them three have been absolute. You know, I'm just hoping that, you know, if he doesn't play regular for Portugal, that's fine. He keeps his name down, and, you know, he keeps him fresh for us when he comes back. Harrison is, you know, his stats and his running stats when they get him on a Monday is just out of this world. You know what I mean? Them three have really do the top stats every midfield player in the country. And that's testament to Silva. He's obviously gotten playing that way, and he's given Harrison the confidence to play like that. And, you know, it's not easy for Pellegrini coming from a new country and settling in as quickly as he's done is remarkable, really, you know, to really grasp it as he did. He's obviously his wife stroke girlfriend's just had a baby, so I'm hoping he's not having too many sleepless nights, and he don't have that sort of father effect that, you know, might affect him when he comes back from World Cup duty. But yeah, Pereira's been the shining light in terms of out of the three was the one that I thought, would he want to do it week in, week out? But, you know, I'll hold my hands up again for once and say, yeah, he's proved me wrong, definitely.
Well, let me ask you this. He's not a total like-for-like for Carvalho. Has he done a lot of what Carvalho does, or is he really different than what he offered?
Yeah, I mean, he's playing in that similar role. He's got a 10 role. He has got a bit of a free role, but I think there is no free role as such with Silva, because if you are playing the 10, you've still got to work and put your shift in, you know, to close down and you know, stop the teams playing between the lines. But, you know, I think his work rate's definitely gone up tenfold from what I can remember of him at Manchester United. And that's probably why he's having to up his game to make sure he stays in the team, because he probably thought, well, you got a club captain sitting on the bench every week who probably could come on and, you know, take his position if he wasn't doing it. But he seems to have knuckled down, and more times than not, week in, week out, he's, you know, he's a 7, 8, 9 every week, and long may that continue.
Okay, excellent. All right, Gordon, over to you. Let's talk about the play up front with Mitro. And also, I want to get your thoughts, I really do, on Vinicius. I've one that wants to see him play a little bit more because I think there's potential there. He's a different player. I'm glad that you've already mentioned that you have to play a little bit differently with Vinicius than you do with Mitro, but also the play from the wings. What have you made of Fulham's play up front, Gordon?
I think as everybody thought when we were coming in and we were sort of relying on Cabano really to take things forward down the wings and Harry Wilson. And you always thought, well, if they get injured, who's going to come in to play that position? But when Solomon came in and from what I've seen, not only in the sort of the few minutes against Liverpool, but in the videos that I've watched of him, I'm really looking forward to him coming in the team because he's good on the ball. He can beat players. He can pick out a pass. He can score goals. And I think he's going to be a completely different player to the ones that we've seen at the moment. And then we get Dan James on loan, which from a Welsh point of view, yes, he gets game time for the World Cup. But he's, again, a completely different player because he's got that pace, which is going to frighten defenders. And sometimes, if I was to sort of sit him down, he's a type of player that goes at 90 miles an hour from start to finish. And sometimes the hardest thing to do is to go at 90 miles an hour. And then when you get in that final third, calm down and then pick out a pass. But we've got four wide players plus Decad Overreed, who, as Rob mentioned, yes, he can fit in at a right wing back, but ideally, I'd still like to see him play as a second man up front with 4-4-2, which we're never going to see with Marco Silva. But I think probably a number 10 position would be his best, just getting in and around Mitro and feeding off Mitro. Going on to Mitro, yes, he's still the mainstay for the team, where the majority of the goals are going to come from. But it's I think that's one position that we may have to look at strengthening in the January transfer window. If not, then definitely at the end of the season. Because as I mentioned earlier, and as you've said, Russ, Vinicius is a completely different player. He is 6 foot plus. He is a big lad, but he never seems to use that physique to hold the ball up. When the ball gets played into him, it always not necessarily bounces off him, but the centre halves get half around him, get a leg in, it bobbles away, and they and midfield players pick it up. And that's a situation for midfield players that you start, instead of making that run to go and support him, you'll do it with Mitrovic all day because you know he's going to hold it up. And it's like when Rob played, if it went into Dean Coney, I'd be going one way, but Rob would always be coming in to support Dean because Dean could hold it up. Right. If we have another player up there who doesn't hold it up, you do it two or three, four times, and then suddenly the midfield players, they know it's going into them, they know he's going to lose it, so they don't make that run to support him. And then lo and behold, he holds it up, and then he's 40 yards away from the midfield players. So I think we've got to learn with Vinicius, I think he's got to learn sometimes to come off, spin and go in behind. And then if he drags the centre-half with him, with his pace, then he can get in behind. And you can change your game up then. But it's certainly he is a bit like Muniz, who's now at Middlesbrough on loan.
I've heard the comparison.
Yeah. He doesn't hold the ball up at all, but he's good going in behind defenders. Now, the days of playing sort of up on the halfway line and having 20, 30 yards in behind to knock that ball, sometimes that's gone these days because we play out from the back. It's a much slower build-up. But the one ball sometimes that may catch teams out, you need somebody quick, and Mitro's not going to chase it into the corner, but I think Vinicius can, I think Muniz can. But to me, both of them are still way off the pace of playing well at a Premier League level. So it's a situation that I think we've got the wide players that can put the balls into dangerous areas when Mitro's there. But I'm looking at Vinicius on the last game. He's always making a near post run, and we are still knocking the ball far post. So we haven't got anybody that's 6 foot plus coming in on the far post, as Mitrovic did against Liverpool in the first game of the season. So we've got to learn to play a different style of game if Mitro isn't there. But he's certainly still the main man that everybody's going to look for when he's playing. And it's down to Vinicius to take his chance when he's given it. And at the moment, he looks yards off the pace, which is frightening if Mitro picks up an injury in the World Cup and we've got to play him come January.
Okay, very good. I'm glad that you went into detail about the difference there, Gordon. The one thing that I saw from him, and I'm glad that you described this, I saw a little bit of that ability to maybe get behind the center back against West Ham, maybe a little bit, but like you said, his hold up play is not good enough and you have to play a little bit differently. And I know Emilio mentioned this to me a great deal, all the balls into the box against Manchester United. If Mitro's there, Fulham score. And it's just, that was just an unfortunate part of that game. So, all right, guys.
I don't see Vinicius being a silver signing, to be honest. I actually think it was a last minute panic signing. We hadn't got any cover for Mitrovic, and maybe he was the best we could get. So yeah, maybe he will do good over time, but Premier League doesn't give you time, unfortunately. When he plays are established, can play to Marcus Silva, and we haven't got the luxury of trying to adapt to Vinicius' way of playing, which I think will mean we need to strengthen the defence. Or Luke Harris, you know, thrust him in the deep end. You know, he's always on the bench. You know, I'd like to maybe see him a little bit more at time, give him a bit of a run out 20, 30 minutes at a time. He can only get better with more experience. So, again, just from what I saw, Vinicius, he had that turn on the ball against Man United, and De Gea made a good save, admittedly. And there were a couple of moments when he went wide, squared the ball into the penalty area, but there was nobody there to mop up. So we'll see. You know, goals are going to, obviously, goes without saying, goals will win you matches, but you know, we're heavily dependent on our big man who's at the moment. Let's see how the World Cup goes.
Okay, excellent stuff. Just for time constraint, I have one more topic, so let's go right to it. And I'll be curious if we're all in agreement or if we disagree. Gordon, who's been the player of the season so far?
After five games, I said you may as well give the man of the season award to Palhinha, because he was head and shoulders above everybody else. But I must admit, and I did say it earlier, the way Harrison Reed is enjoying playing a slightly different role, then if he keeps playing like that for the rest of the season, then I've got a feeling it could well be between those two that are going to be first and second.
Well, are you hearing that, Emilio? Just saying. Okay. Rob, player of the season so far?
Well, you can't look no further than Pellini, but, you know, man, I still think, and I take on board what Gordon says about Harrison. I think he'll probably run him close, but, you know, we shouldn't take out the equation. The man up top, you don't score the goals he scored, you know, for the last three, four seasons, and don't finish in the top two of a player of the season for a club. So I'll be very surprised if he doesn't get 20 goals this season, and I'll be very surprised if he's not in the top two of our player of the season come the end of the season. For him to score another 10 or 11 goals will get us valuable points, and points are, you know, what make surprises. I mean, Pellini's doing a grand job in stopping people getting points, but, you know, as much as I, you know, I'm a midfield player, and I'd say at the current stage it's definitely Pellini, but, you know, we cannot oversee what the top man up the top's doing for us.
Absolutely. There, Rob. Okay, Emilio, I'm going to give you final say on this.
Yeah, I think, Paulinho, without a shadow of a doubt, I think we've talked about it at length in the show. Again, want to give Tim Ream a call out here, 35 years of age.
I was thinking the same thing, by the way.
Another team, Mr. Calm, you know, come on. You know, it's, you know, you can't, none of us expected what he's done for us. I know, we're conceding goals. I've said that 10 minutes ago, but his captaincy qualities, his leadership qualities, his calmness on the ball, his experience. That's, I think Paulinho gets the best, you know, Tim Ream and Paulinho, they're linking up there together. I think Paulinho knows he's got Tim Ream there to mop up with his calm, composed way of playing and just his leadership qualities. You know, that means a lot. In the Premier League, you need a captain who talks and leads from the back to the front. So overall, Tim Ream has got to be up there in the top three as well. So it's got to be a tight run for their money. So Paulinho, Harrison Reed, admittedly, has had a very good season, and Tim Ream and Mitrovic, you know, but so have all the other players. They've all played their part to get us to seventh place.
Okay. I'm going to go with Paulinho. I said it the minute we signed him. I thought that he would change form, and he certainly has. So I'm going to go with Paulinho. All right, guys. Great show. Gordon, as always, thank you so much for joining Emilio and Rob and me tonight.
Thanks, Russ. I enjoyed it, and I enjoy the Rob's comments, and especially I'll have to call him Mr. P now because he's the positive man. So Emilio, Mr. P.
Wow.
Well done. Well done.
Wow, yeah, that's positivity.
That's saying something.
We still got half a season to go yet, Gordon.
Yeah, it can soon change, Rob.
If we know what the Premier League is like, it can change very quickly.
If we're currently conceding two a game and that goes to three a game, I'm sure there'll be some flack coming the end of the season.
See, Gordon, look what you started. Now you're calling him Mr. Positivity. He has to go to the dark side. All right. Rob, thank you as always for joining us.
That's a pleasure. No, I love it. Always like to get it. I just like, I know we didn't get time to touch on it, but yep. if I wanted a key player, if I were Khan, I'd go and spend 30 or 40 million on a centre half in January.
Okay.
And I would go and spend another 20 or 30 million on a decent backup striker for Mitro.
Yeah.
If we invest 50 or 60 million in January, we'll finish the season in the top eight easy.
Wow. I love that. All right, Emilio, final thoughts before we go.
Yeah, great show. Always love doing it with the guys on the show. Like I said, I'm more optimistic, more popular, again, more realistic as well. You know what I'm like. But one thing I want to call out as well, my work colleagues at the World Cup at the moment, guess who we had breakfast with yesterday morning? And I've got the photograph.
Oh.
Dempsey.
Rob Payne.
Clint Dempsey.
Get him to get Clint Dempsey on the show.
I want to get him on the show. So, yeah, I've got a photograph of my work colleague.
Okay.
Yeah, breakfasting with Mr. Dempsey. So, overall.
And then, please, if you get him on the show, please ask him, the Juventus goal, was it a chip to the far post or was it a chip because he saw the keeper off the line?
Absolutely. But
Gordon, I just want to get him on the show. It's the one guest I want to get on the show more than anything is Clint Dempsey. Clint Dempsey brought me to Fulham. I want to get him on. I've tried every way to try to reach Clint to get him on the show. And I've unfortunately not been able to reach out to him in a positive way, have been able to actually reach him. So I would love to get Clint.
Well, you've got a connection now. Emilio, sort it.
I know. All right, Emilio.
Yeah, great show. Fulham, you know, good luck at the beginning of the year. And World Cup players, prove your value, basically. So I'm looking forward to the next few weeks of entertainment. What was the final score with France tonight?
4-1.
I believe it was
4-1.
4-1.
4-1. And it's funny because Rob said it was probably going to end 4-1.
No surprise right there, then.
Yeah, that's funny. All right. Well, listen.
Okay, guys.
Great show, guys, but I do have to wrap this up. For Emilio, Rob, and Gordon, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as always for watching and listening to Cottage Talk, part of the Talk Sport Fan Network. It's the 90th minute. And all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping. And you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.